For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 420, Best Marvel Games. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode with superheroes.
Yeah.
IP distinct Marvel superheroes, Anthony.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We are picking sides here. So...
at least until the next Flash movie comes out, or the one after, or the one after, or the one they'll eventually get it right.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've heard that the Flash movie might not be terrible, so that's a thing. I know. I mean, honestly, the preview looks good, and not just because of Michael Keaton. And that Blue Beetle trailer actually looks not terrible. So I don't know. Maybe DC's got something we don't know about. Just saying.
Could happen. I mean, eventually yeah. It's going to happen. So, you know, having good people there should make things a little bit better. But I don't know. We're seeing devastation in the DC universe. So we're going to our true heroes of the moment, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and all of the amazing games that they put out over the years. And again, I think for a lot of us who've been in board gaming for a while or in video games for a while, we understand, I guess, historically what happens when an IP game comes out, right? An intellectual property that you love and care about, something from your childhood, and they're like, we're going to make that a game. And you're like, you're going to mess it up. And inevitably, they do. But we have 10 of the best games where they don't mess the game up. And I think we've seen a radical shift in the industry over the last 10 years where now there's actual individual gameplay that really matters and mechanics that are really good. And not just a pasted on theme, like, you know, a Marvel Monopoly game is not going to make this list.
No. Yeah. The thing is, it used to just be about, like, let's get this on the shelf. People will buy it because it exists. But the standards have gone up. The expectations have gone up. It's not just hobby board gamers like ourselves who are saying we want better quality games. It's everybody. It's parents. It's children. It's, you know, they're used to a higher quality of experience. And so just slapping a theme on something where you roll a bunch of dice and move in a circle doesn't really work unless you're like four, you know, and,
that's true.
And we're not four. We're grown men who love comic books. So give us real games. And these are good. These are 10 good real games.
These are 10 great games. So we'll be talking about that on our feature review. But before that, we would really appreciate if you could all be superheroes for us and head over to Board Game Geek and nominate us for the prestigious Golden Geek Awards. This is Board Game Geek's, I guess, yearly event in which they take literally every podcast that's ever come out at any point, even for just like one episode or has been gone for, you know, 20 years, and they stick it on a list. And then you have to kind of, you know, go through all of those and nominate your favorite podcast. So we would appreciate if you would, because again, it helps with our global domination plan. So please nominate us so that we can take over the universe. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Now, the next step is recognition on Board Game Geek. Mm-hmm. After that is the Death Ray. So
there you go.
We're getting there. But we got to do Board Game Geek first. Otherwise, Death Ray's not happening.
Come on, guys. Let's get together. Let's get some Death Ray on the table. So we've never been nominated before. We would love to be nominated. And again, a nomination equals death ray. That's all we're saying. Just go for it.
It's either a promise or a threat, however you want to take it, but just get it done.
That's right. All right. So that's all that stuff that's going on with us. Again, thank you all for your support. It means so much to us. And thank you for listening. I also wanted to let people know who may not be on Patreon that I have brought back Kicking the Habit. So this week, on Tuesday, I went through, I think, about a dozen different Kickstarters that came out. And I just talked about all the great stuff that's coming out, what you should back, what you may want to avoid. And it's just like an evolving process of, you know, Kickstarter, GameFound, and all those kind of crowdsourcing platforms. I've done this before, about 30 some odd episodes, and we brought it back for our Patreon backers. So if you're interested in learning about all the Kickstarters that are coming out, and again, later on I'm going to add GameFound, or if you have any suggestions, let us know. So Anthony, that's happening with us again. And what's happening with our listeners? What's our question of the week?
All right. Yeah. Question of the week this week. What game were you initially cold on, but came around to after multiple plays? So, and specifically asking beyond that, do you feel the game specifically needed multiple plays and therefore might be underrated broadly by other people? So a game that just doesn't really click on that first play, doesn't make a good first impression. Or is it just a personal experience where you had a bad first play? Mm. I've certainly had that happen multiple cases for myself. So over on the Patreon, and again, you can answer these questions of the week on Patreon or in our Discord and be entered for a chance to win a prize that we give away every couple weeks. This week, we have a prize package from FanRoll. So check out FanRoll. They have a lot of amazing dice products. So we'll be sending out some dice. Drew says, Undaunted. After several plays, I began to appreciate the stacked complexities of deck building tactics and battle tactics. Initial plays were battles of attrition, but the game has blossomed into an intriguing deck building war themed chess. So it's, I think any game that's like simple to learn, lifetime to master, that first play is going to be like, what, this is it. This is all we're doing. We're moving pieces around.
Sure.
But then you get into some depth to it. You're like, oh, there's a lot here. Once you understand everything interplays. Martin mentions Terraforming Mars for both him and his wife. First time I played it at a con, I couldn't figure out why everyone had this massive tableau. Well, I was paying the cost printed on the cards to buy them and play them. It was towards the end when we figured it out. Then the second and third time, it was four players and dragged on too long.
Sure.
Now, fifth play and on, just two players, mostly him and his wife. It's one of our favorite games, and I've recorded over 40 plays. So
nice.
Just very found, nice. Taken, you had to find the right player count and group and get the rules right. So I hear you, Martin. I've been there. Matthew mentions a game called The Faceless that was on Kickstarter a few years ago. So he describes it as an odd game where you play cards to move characters around the outside of the board to move a compass on the board to complete objectives. So the characters have magnets and the bad guy has a magnet. And they played it wrong for a long time. So it sat on the shelf for 3 years. But then they were about to sell it, decided to give it one final try, and then turns out they loved it because they're playing the rules wrong. So, wrong rules is a big one. I've done that before. Like, somebody will teach me a game, I'll play it, and be like, that wasn't very good. Especially if I own it at home then, and then I'm like, okay, well, I guess I know the rules now. But then if you actually go back and read them, you're like, oh, we were doing it completely wrong, and we skipped this part, and the end condition is actually this. So, that's rough. I think the biggest one for me, though, that I didn't like on initial play was Seven Wonders. Mm. Because the first time I played it, I was like the only person who hadn't played it before, and no one felt like teaching it. So they're like, yeah, no, you'll figure it out as we go. You'll figure it out as we go. It's easy. And then we played it. I'm like, yeah, I didn't figure it out as we went, and I lost by a lot. So that sucked. Sure. So it's a 5-minute teach. Just someone take 5 minutes and tell me what I'm doing. And so I avoided it for a while because I was like, this game is just random and you just kind of play random. I don't know. I don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing. And eventually when I played it, it's a brilliant game. Obviously it's Seven Wonders.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. I think for me, the initial play of Brass, because coming out of playing Euro games where you build things so that you can use the resources and that what's what leads to success. And now you play Brass and you build things that produce resources so that other people can use them for their success. but somehow their success leads to your success. So that was something that I really had to wrap my brain around, including taking out loans, which again, anytime you take out a loan or some sort of penalty marker in a game, it's going to hit you again and again and again. And in brass, you almost want to take out a loan right off the bat. So that was one of the things that were just like, initially I was like, none of these things make sense. Why are we doing this? But again, it's just a mentality that I just did not grow up in, did not understand that kind of complexity of like, hey, this is a thing you do because of these reasons. Yeah. And then I would also add too, Agricola needs multiple plays because as Anthony knows here, the card combinations is really where the game sings. And if you don't get an opportunity to see those cards, or like Anthony said, like have someone sit down with you and just go through the cards to give you a sense of like how they pair together, it's going to be a bad time. So,
yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I have not come around on Agricola, but I would say that my second and third plays were better than the first when I had no idea what was coming out of that deck. So here's the thing, people. If you're playing a game with cards in a deck and people are only going to get a very small handful of those throughout the game, take 5 minutes and show them what the possible options are.
Sure.
That's part of teaching the game. If you don't do that, you have failed as a teacher. Don't be a failure as a teacher. Like, it's not fun for them.
No.
And it's, you know, it, and sometimes when you're teaching people, like, no, I get it. It's fine. I'll see them as we go. It's like, no, you need to see these cards, because if you don't, it's not going to be fun for you. You're not going to know what you're building towards.
It's important. I think generally when I teach a game, if the outcome should typically be, not purposefully generally, but should typically be, the teacher should lose, right?
Yeah.
Like, you should teach the game so well that you're giving the right information for other people to make the optimal plays. And then obviously as a teacher, you have to manage and keep an eye on other people's situations. So it doesn't allow you to focus as much, but it allows them to get the most out of the game. So like, as you mentioned, I played Agricola, and I remember one time playing a game where, and I can't remember, I think there's a religious statue that is one of the cards, and it takes away the negative points. And I'm like, I remember having it in my hand. I'm like, why would I pick this card? So I pass it along, and then there's another card, and it's a negative, you know, a negative effect, you know, negative points, but it has a very positive effect. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's why, right? Because I hadn't seen any other negative cards before that. So, but that opportunity had passed me, and then someone later had played that, and it was a big, you know, swing for them. And I was just like, okay, so that makes sense. So that card's there because of some other cards, which again, lends itself to it. But again, when you're playing cards with giant decks, you may never see those cards, or they may not be in that particular deck because only so many cards come out. So yeah, I think a lot of these issues could be taken care of by just having a teacher more present in that kind of experience. But yeah, no, cool stuff.
Yeah, awesome. So again, over on Patreon, we give away a prize. And Martin, thank you for sharing your story about Terraforming Mars with you and your wife. We've all had that experience, I think. So you will be getting a prize package from FanRoll in the mail.
Is it a death laser? It's a death laser.
I wish it was a death laser. We should talk to those guys at FanRoll. We're like, hey, can you make a death laser? We want a death laser. I mean, we got to get this whole Board Game Geek thing figured out, but start working on it now. So once we get there, we'll have the death ray.
Nice.
And I did want to shout out too. We had a few answers over on Facebook. I'm not going to read them all through here, but even if you're not a Patreon backer, you can participate. We have the questions go up on Facebook and Twitter as well every Tuesday. So David mentioned Spirit Island and how it kind of blew his brain. Scott mentions Kanban and how the chairs and the scoring didn't click the first time.
Absolutely.
Andy mentions Undaunted as well, and how just like the game really doesn't come together until you've played it a bit more. Jocko mentions Star Wars Rebellion and how they played the battle rules wrong, which really make that game suck.
Yeah, that happens.
Andres mentioned Grand Austria Hotel. So potentially the teach, but also maybe just the game was too long, but played it online game and found the combos and the puzzles really worked.
Yeah. It's another game with a lot of cards.
Yeah. So lots of good answers. I think we all have this experience of some game probably earlier in the hobby where we're just like, nah, this is bad. And then you go back to it later. You're like, nope, we were playing it wrong. So
true.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you all for yeah, no, thank you all for letting us know, and thank you all for taking the opportunity to get the game to the table a second time, because sometimes you miss out on a lot of those great games from that first bad teach or that first bad experience or any number of things. So again, love reintroducing those games out to players. So again, hit us up on all of our social media accounts. We would love to hear from you. And the question of the week, there every week. Please hit us up and let people know. All right, Anthony, so that's everything that's happened with our friends out there. Let's get on to things that we want to hit the table. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right. So for me, it is Cascadia Landmarks.
Of course it is.
Yeah, you knew it is.
Cascadia guy.
Yeah,
doing the Cascadia things.
Yeah. So this is the first expansion for Cascadia, which was my 2021 game of the year. And it is adding landmarks, naturally, right? The game's all about building out habitats and placing wildlife in the Pacific Northwest. So now we're going to be adding landmarks to kind of indicate these different parts of the mountains or waterfalls or whatever. They haven't really released what all they're going to be yet. But it'll make the environments a little more unique, have their own look and feel, plus add more dynamic scoring stuff to the end game, which that's why this game is so good. It's like you're kind of juggling the different scoring opportunities. So awesome stuff all around. Now, the flip side of this is that it has an expansion for 5 to 6 players.
Ah, I knew that was coming.
Which, can you just not put that in the box and I can save $10? That'd be great. Can you just sell the landmarks part? It's probably just a deck of cards or tiles, and you're going to make me buy all the 5 to 6 player stuff. I don't even play this with other people. I play it alone or with my son. So I don't want 5 to 6 players for Cascadia. But if you do, they're doing that.
I want to have more people be able to play the game. So the 5 to 6 player expansion's good, but the danger here is, and again, this is a description from the publisher, is that there's enough components to play Cascadia with 5 to 6 players. Not that it has a game mode for 5 to 6 players, or like it's been redesigned, or the expansion is meant for 5 to 6 players. Because that's always what concerns me about a lot of games, is at some point, you got to do something different because the player count becomes too big. So like Concordia, when you hit 6 players, then you do teams, right? So there's different dynamics to it.
I 100% agree. I don't know that it'll affect this game, though, because at the end of the day, there's only so many location types, and there's only so many animal types. And if you have too much, like if you have 3 of the same animal in the in the market, you wipe it anyways.
Sure.
So I think it'll be fine. If they were like adding new animals or something, and then 5 to 6 players, and it watered down the bag, that could be a problem. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll see how it works out. Like, if you have now 6 stacks of tiles instead of 4 stacks of tiles, are we suddenly only getting mountain tiles for 3 rounds in a row? And people are like, I don't want mountain tiles. I just don't like playing hour-long games with 6 people. I don't enjoy it. Like, if I'm going to play with that many people, it's got to be quick or social.
All right, people, you heard him say it. He's going to play this game with 5 to 6 players. So
no, never.
Yes, it's on the podcast. Recorded.
Yeah, I'm going to own the components to do that, but I will not be doing it.
Come on, man. We need a death laser. If you do it, people will buy us a death laser.
Okay, if I get enough emails saying, if you do this, we'll buy you a death laser, I'll do it. But I need validation on that. I don't need it.
All right. We want nominations for the Golden Geek Award, and it's those podcasts that go the extra mile and do the 5 to 6 players that get the death laser. Come on. That's all I'm saying.
Fine.
All right. Well, I have a Kickstarter here for you. This is Santorini Co-op and Deluxe Pantheon Edition. The long-awaited Deluxe Pantheon Edition. I don't know if it's long-awaited. Plus a brand new cooperative expansion, which I don't think that was necessarily anticipated either, but it's currently on Kickstarter, and the project will back because they made oodles and oodles of money, $500,000 on Friday, April 28th. So this is Santorini. If you have not played Santorini, it is typically, and again, I say typically because there's other modes, it's typically a 2-player game in which you're utilizing Greek gods and goddesses to be able to build up Santorini with these wonderful little buildings and these wondrous blue caps on top. And It's a really great little abstract game. I bought it. Anthony, you bought this too, right? I think you backed the Kickstarter, right?
I did, yeah. I paid way too much money for this before it was like $20 at Walmart.
I paid the $20 at Walmart.
Yeah, it's smart, dude. Freaking.
I don't know specifically Walmart, but I did pay the... I didn't get the... So if you bought the version Anthony got, he got a lot of additional cards and gods, and he also got, I think, there's like an extra... I guess, modular artistic piece to kind of make the island perk up a little bit more. And then the retail version was like the thinned out kind of like cardboard thing. It's not bad because basically all it is, it's like, it's a plain board. It's just a square board. It's a grid.
It was $40 for cosmetics. Yeah, basically is what I paid. So
you got some cards, right? There were some cards with it too.
I guess. Yeah. But like, I mostly play this with the kids, so we don't even really use the gods half the time. Only recently have we started using the gods, so even though I've played this game like 100, 150 times, I doubt I've ever even used those Kickstarter gods. So, again, $40 for a plastic island, which is cool. It's a cool plastic island thing. But
yeah, and primarily the game is building to lock the other opponents out, and again, the god cards have a special ability. So this Pantheon edition, because as Anthony has alluded to, I don't know if anyone's asking for it, but there is new gods. Cool. There is revamped rules. Okay. And there are stunning new components. So there's a new 3D island frame. So it looks like a more realistic island. The buildings and the workers look a little more detailed as far as plastic minis are concerned. There's more gods. There's a storage tray. And it's a, I don't know, Anthony, would you say this is better looking than your edition? I know it's definitely better looking than my edition.
I can't tell. Honestly, it looks the same. But yeah, there must be something different because it's $50 to upgrade from what I have to this. But like the upgrade too, it doesn't include the pedestal or the new worker miniatures or the remastered towers. I'm like, what does it include then? What am I getting for $50? I don't get it.
Well, what's interesting too, again, is if you look at the prices, and I talked about this on Kicking the Habit too, is if, like you said, if you want to do the upgrade kit, it's $49. But instead, if you just want to back, you know, the other, like the full edition, it's $67. So why are you, for the sake of $18, why are you doing that? Like, just back the whole thing. I mean, it's nice. I appreciate when they offer the kind of upgrade kit. I always love that. But if you put money into this company to be able to help them produce a game, and thankfully it was very successful, I feel like the upgrade kit should be somewhat cheaper. It should be half price of the base game.
Yeah, the upgrade kit is, I'm frustrated by that. It's silly.
Yeah, it should be maybe 30. Or 25. It's just a little weird. But there's also the Riddle of the Sphinx. So like a lot of Red Raven games where there's this storybook, or Jaws of the Lion, the Gloomhaven game, where it's basically there's a book and the book acts as the game board. And as you go through the different pages, it's a co-op game or a solo game in which you are trying to meet certain objectives on those particular boards by buildings in those particular areas and unlocking other gods. So unique maps. There's, as I said, a co-op solo mode, which is different. And again, it's a different way to play. It's smart, interesting idea for it. I don't know if I necessarily want to play Santorini alone, but I guess if you're really into that puzzling kind of look and game, this is another way to kind of play the game. So there you go. Santorini Co-op and Deluxe Pantheon Edition. It's on Kickstarter right now.
Yeah. I don't know. The thing is, like, I do want to play it solo. I think that would be cool. Or cooperatively with the kids. But the pricing here is just, it's bananas. I don't understand what... And it's, you know, the pricing on the first Kickstarter wasn't great either. And I'm happy I have it. I've played it a lot.
Sure.
But, like, I was really excited about this. I had bookmarked it. I jumped on. And then I saw the pricing. And I especially saw, like, the upgrade kit pricing. Where they give you a box, an insert, and the cards for $50.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, guys. Like, if I want the upgrade kit and this expansion, it's over $100. Mm-hmm. And it's not worth it. I mean, maybe it is worth it. I don't know. And a lot of people are backing it. But the pricing of things these days is so obscene. And predatory. And, you know, existing backers paid significantly more than retail for not very much stuff. And then now you're charging them again almost as much as the full game. Like, you can tell I've soured on Kickstarter a little bit. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, if you wanted back the new game and the Riddle of the Sphinx, it's $111, which, again, more or less these days, that's kind of the standard. But considering that this game already came out on Kickstarter, there's already a cheaper retail version for it, and even if you've made the miniatures and the buildings and the island a little more detailed, it is still a leap. I think you could say, like, all these Kickstarter games are now 100+. You could say that. I don't think this is necessarily a thing unless you've never played this game or you really want to play this game or you're a collector of this game.
Yeah. I mean, just go buy you can probably find a copy of this for like 10 or 15 bucks somewhere. At least try that. And then if you love it beyond words, then pick this up.
Absolutely. All right, so that's the games that are hitting our tables, hopefully in the future, along with a giant death ray. Anthony, let's talk about the games that did hit the table, what we did play, and we'll let people know if they should back those games because they're awesome, if those games should be a dodge and avoided, or if they should just, I don't know, play the games because they're fun, or in fact, if they are the dreaded burn, and then, you know, that's why you have a death ray, because burning games needs a death ray. So,
all right, so for me, this will be a quick one because it's not really a new game. They say it's a new game. It's not. Naturopolis is the third in the Sprawlopolis line. So there was Sprawlopolis, then Agropolis, which was like a farming version of that, and then Naturopolis, which is a like nature version of that. The core game is simple. This is a button shy game, so it's 18 cards. Every card on the backside has some scoring condition. You take three of those cards out of the deck, you place them face up. Those are the scoring conditions for your game. So you have a bunch of different combinations of potential scoring methods, which means it's hard to know if you've done well in a game, but they've added these numbers, you know, over the years to the cards that tell you like what your target score is. So, you know, if you pull out card number 4, 7, and 3, then your goal is 14 points, right? But if you pull out cards number 1, 2, and 3, then your goal is only 6 points. So it really, you know, it depends on what cards you're doing, and they'll be harder or easier depending. You can play this with up to 4 people now. I think the original was 1 to 2 people. I always play it alone. It's really designed as a solo game. And so you have a hand of 3 cards. You put one down into the tableau. You draw another card, so on and so forth, until you've placed all 15 cards. Placement rules are pretty simple. You have to place it orthogonally adjacent to an existing card, or it can overlap half of an existing card. So, or 2 cards in some way. So you can place them on top of each other. You don't have to sprawl out. You can kind of keep it condensed. The roads are negative points. So however many roads you have at the end of the game in the tableau, it's going to be negative points. And Naturopolis is different in that it takes out half the roads and replaces them with rivers, which are not negative points. You still have to connect them, and you can't have a river running into a road. That would break the placement rules. And now the roads, instead of being -1 each, are -2 each because there are fewer of them. So that's the main change in the game between the Agropolis and Sprawlopolis and Naturopolis, is that you now have rivers that don't hurt your score. They also add campsites, which are directly, they're like just little camping grounds you can see on the map. Of the individual cards, and those relate to certain scoring conditions. That's mostly it, right? It doesn't really change much. Obviously, you have different types of terrain now. It's mountains, lakes, forests, and meadows, instead of like the in Sprawlopolis, it's like commercial and residential, like your usual SimCity stuff. But I mean, the game is so good. Like, I keep backing these because A, they're only $10, and it's just like a slightly different version of what I already have, which is fun to have. But Sprawlopolis is one of my top 100 games. It's just such a fun, easy, quick thing. Anytime I travel, I bring one of these. Sometimes I bring two of them because I know I'll play it if I have a few minutes. I'm like, okay, I just need to clear my mind. I will sometimes just play it at my desk. Like if I just get off a call with somebody, or if I'm dealing with a difficult student situation, I might just clear my desk. Like, I'm just going to play a game real quick and clear my mind. It'll take 10 minutes. I'm not super invested, but it feels good. It's thinky and it's always satisfying at the end, unless I do really poorly. It came with a few little mini expansions I haven't had a chance to play with yet. And it did come with, they now have Combopolis, where you can combine different combinations. So there's special cards that let you combine Naturopolis with Agropolis or Sprawlopolis with Agropolis, or all three together into your ultimate game, where you now have 50 something cards that you can play with to get a much bigger tableau. I haven't done that yet. I did combine Naturopolis and Sprawlopolis and just to see kind of what the flow looks like. But I do look forward to playing that. I just need a bigger, I need the table downstairs, the dining room table, to be clear, because I need more space. But it's good. Like, if you haven't bought any of these, if you don't have Sprawlopolis or any of these, if you're looking for like a little quick card game that you can play solo, it's amazing. Highly, highly recommend it. These are all buys for me. If they cost more money, if these were like each $20 or $30 in a box, I probably wouldn't have bought this, because I have two other ones and it doesn't change that much. But because they're so inexpensive and because they always come with all these mini expansions to kind of grow out the play in different ways, I'll keep backing them as long as they make them. So Naturopolis, super recommended. I'm pretty sure you can just buy these off their website or at conventions when they're there. So if you want nature, you got this. If you want farming theme, you got Agropolis. If you want the city theme, you got Sprawlopolis. They're all amazing. Highly recommended.
Have you ever backed any of these on Kickstarter?
All of them. No, not okay. Sprawlopolis. No, I backed Agropolis and this one. Sprawlopolis, I played with somebody co-op for the first time, and then I went home and ordered a copy.
Sure. Is it worth backing these on Kickstarter? Because when I looked at this, and the shipping is not that expensive, $5-$10, depending on where you live.
Right.
Is that worth it? Like, do they come out in retail? Like, is it, or to go to the website, like, where do you find these otherwise?
I'm pretty sure they don't come out in retail that I'm aware of, unless the retailer has backed them.
Sure.
So I think the only ways you can get them on a recurring basis is either through their website, in which case you're paying the same shipping.
Sure.
Or at a convention, which would probably be cheaper, but then you have to find them at a convention. I don't believe they do stretch goals or anything like that. Their big thing is, like, we run a Kickstarter every month and then we ship it out like a month later. So, like, this was on Kickstarter, like, in January or February, and I got it in, like, 2 weeks ago. So it's very quick turnaround, because they print them here, they package them here, and then he mails them out.
Very cool. All right, well, I got to play an expansion for one of my favorite games, Spirit Island. If you haven't played Spirit Island, it's a world of magic and wonder, and the Han people, the villagers, are living with their spirits on this island, and then here comes Europe and their colonists, imperialists, to kind of blight the land and take over. So utilizing the Dahan people and your particular spirit in that game, you play a co-op game with other players or by yourself with one or more spirits, and you use this modular board to set up the land, set up the different Dahan people where they're situated. And then the invaders have an initial setup, and then throughout the game, you're battling against them, utilizing cards that can work with other spirit cards. So there's a kind of like a communication of, like, if I play this on your thing, you play this on mine, we play this in a particular order, and then we will have the benefit of being able to drive out the invaders. The invaders kind of grow and explore and build and then ravage. So there's a timeline. There's a very puzzle-like mechanic in the play. It's one of my favorite games. This is way back in 2017 from R. Eric Roos and from Greater Than Games. I've really enjoyed this game. It's got a lot of different opportunities for play. It definitely benefits from a very quiet environment, because you do have to share a lot of information together in order to kind of manage out the puzzle and the immense spread that happens. This game's online in multiple places as well. So for this expansion, I played Spirit Island Branch and Claw. This came out in 2017. And what comes with the expansion is two new spirits. One spirit is called Sharp Fangs Behind the Leaves, and the second one is Keeper of the Forbidden Wilds. It also offers a new adversary, France, in this scenario. And it offers a event deck that comes into the play and a bunch of additional cards that you play with amongst, obviously, the cards that come with the particular spirit. So the event deck is interesting because an event happens each turn and you have some randomization and some, you know, basis of what happens based on what's going on the board. And what really kind of, I guess, sets this game apart beyond all the additional cards in the game is you're going to get a lot of new tokens that are going to come into play here. And the tokens are essential for the gameplay, especially with these two spirits. So, for example, there are animals, and the animals are out there, and they're going to do, again, based on how the spirit's able to utilize them. So they'll do a lot of damage. They'll kind of support those areas that come out of the jungles, and they come out with their other animals' tokens out there. And they're basically helping you push back and hold the land. There's also wilds, and these wilds, again, also are beneficial to help you stop a lot of the building and the ravages. Disease tokens are out there too, again, stopping a lot of the build actions, preventing those. Strife, which, you know, targets a lot of the explorers, a lot of the people tokens that are out there. And based upon your spirits that you're utilizing in the game, you have more or less kind of control over their activities. Obviously, the animal ones benefit by using the spirit of the sharp fangs behind the leaves. And then for the Keeper of the Forbidden Wilds, obviously the Wilds tokens are essential. So these two spirits work best with the tokens, but obviously utilizing the events, because the events also utilize a lot of the different tokens, this is kind of like a, you know, you have to kind of play with everything. You can use these things with other spirits, but really, if you want to get the most bang out of the buck, you want to use these spirits because of the event cards and because of the tokens into play. There's not much too much different. Again, France comes into play, and France has its own kind of interesting win conditions, which it has a lot of buildings, and when they run out of buildings, they win. So you have to kind of manage that situation as well. The two spirits are great. I really enjoy the one that's based on the animals because that really offers a lot more dynamic gameplay because they spread out there, whereas the Keeper of the Forest is doing a lot of just like holding things stable. Together, they make a really great combination. So it's a lot of fun to get to the table. Great as a co-op game, great as a solo game. The same artwork, the same token quality. Take it as, you know, it's good. Could be better. There is some upgrade packs to make the tokens better. But generally a great co-op game. This is a good addition to it. I think it plays different enough that I would recommend it, especially for the fact that it comes with the event cards, which, again, adds a little more change to the game, which can be a little hard to manage. But at the same time, I think the game needs it. I played enough of Spirit Island to go, okay, and everyone does this, everyone does this, everyone does this. It's the same thing over and over again. You're trying to prevent the other thing. By having the events in play, it really opens the game up and tells more of a story. So Spirit Island, Rant and Blog.
Awesome. Yeah, I love Spirit Island. I've only had a chance to play this expansion maybe once or twice, but I liked what it added. It's more depth. It's more decisions to make. Let's make a complex game slightly more complex, but then also more flexible, which is the best way to make a game more. Yeah, it's the best way to make a game more complex. It's like, okay, but now you have more options within these tight situations.
Yeah, sometimes with Spirit Island, it bogs down a little bit because you really have to get the formula right early on. Like if you let a certain area kind of fester and they're building towns and cities and spreading people out and you didn't like, oh, I should have moved this and I should have done this a little bit earlier. And now it's just out of control. This allows you that opportunity to get like some support or variability on how certain things happen and in what order. So yeah, no, that's very cool. All right, so that's all the games that are on our table this week. Now on to our feature review. Our feature review this week, of course, is the best of the best, the Marvel games. We're talking about the superhero games that we love to get to the table, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and obviously all the comics that we love and enjoy, the video games, the card games, everything all in one spot. Anthony, you're a big Marvel fan. You have, like, most of these games, do you not?
Yeah, I guess more than I should. I do have a bunch of these. I'm not even the biggest Marvel fan. It's funny. I mean, these are good games, though. So it's not like I'm buying them because they're Marvel. But I have grown to appreciate the world that Marvel offers, and the games, you know, when they're good, they kind of reflect it pretty well.
Very true. So, Anthony, what's our number 10?
All right, number 10 on the list is, so we mentioned before kind of slapping the theme on things. We don't have a lot of these mixed in, but yeah, there are a couple. So this one is Splendor Marvel. Splendor, of course, the game of gems. So it was a natural fit, right? So you have kind of the growth of the Infinity Saga and then pairing that up with Splendor, which is a game about gems. So it is basically Splendor, but it has a few tweaks to it, right? It's a slightly different color structure. The end game trigger is a little different. There's some different victory conditions because you're trying to stop Thanos. You're not just purely accumulating points. But at the end of the day, it's Splendor and it's Marvel. And for people who like either or both of those, it's a great game.
Yeah, and you got a lot of really cool artwork here too. So
yeah,
if you, you know, again, sometimes those little slight differences do make a big difference. And this is one of those weirdly pasted on themes that actually really works because gems. So collecting and sharing. And again, the artwork is not kiddie. It's actually like real serious comic book artwork, which is surprising to see in a Splendor game. All right, I think what's our number 9?
Number 9 is Marvel Villainous. Yeah, this is a game you've played before, right?
Yeah, I actually like this game a lot. I mean, I have, you know, when I started playing those Villainous games, I was kind of struck by it. I was like, oh, this is going to be the worst because clearly this is, you know, a Disney, you know, ripoff and they don't know how to play games. And then like you play the game, you're like, oh, cool. They put some scythe in here. Like I know how to do the scythe thing where you move the pieces to activate the special abilities and then you can put stuff on other people. So that works for a lot of their villainous characters. And it makes a lot of sense in the Marvel universe as well. There's Hela from, you know, all the Thor kind of stuff, Killmonger, Taskmaster, Thanos and Ultron, right? So you get those unique characters. And again, in this scenario, you're playing as the villains trying to stop the other villains from winning. So again, world domination and death laser. I'm just saying, people, help a brother out, okay? So yeah, you get to play one of these characters. It's all the iconic figures in the Marvel universe. And it's a lot of fun to throw, you know, good guys on bad guys as Thanos is trying to collect all of the Infinity Stones. Because again, it was an Infinity Saga and every game at that time was doing Thanos and an Infinity kind of victory conditions.
I think we have three. Yeah. That are just basically Infinity War. So
I think they've certainly gone out of their way to milk this whole thing to the nth degree, but again, it makes sense, right? It was the big Marvel bad. So when you play Villainous, you get a lot of these stones and you try to do what you can to kind of, I guess, dominate the universe. Cause you know, that's the thing you want to teach kids, right?
I mean, that's what we're doing, right?
I know. This is what I'm saying. It's a thing you want to teach kids.
Death ray.
All right, Anthony, number 8.
Number 8 is Damage Control. This is a new one from WizKids, which is, I don't even know if it's fully out yet, but we've had a chance to review it and play it. This is a deck building game, but it's unique because you have like all the rubble from the heroes kind of destroying the city in their fights, and you're cleaning it up as a member of Damage Control. It's a very fast paced game. You don't get a lot of turns to build your deck, but there's a lot of interesting mechanics. You're building a tableau of superheroes that will help you a little bit before they kind of run off again. You're gathering all these artifacts from the fight that took place, depending on the modules that you throw into the deck. And it's just a clever, quick 30-minute deck builder.
Yeah, a nice little game to kind of, again, I think this is a great one for family and kids because when we played it, we're like, oh, where's the bigger thing? I'm like, it's not supposed to be bigger. It's supposed to be small. You do a couple of things and you get a thing. And again, surprisingly thematic. I mean, you literally have a table full or I guess a square area of damage. So picking up the, you know, the pieces, the artifacts, the special weapons from there, it's really pretty cool. Like, it's a smart idea that they went with that. I'm just like, someone must have pitched that and they were like, so let me get this straight. These cards are just going to be like splayed out like in a mess. And then the game is you picking them up and then deciding to add them. Like, yeah, they're like, cool, let's do that.
Yeah.
All right, Anthony, what's for our number 7?
Number seven is Marvel Dice Masters. So Dice Masters has kind of grown beyond just Marvel, but it started out with Avengers versus X-Men as the first IP that it glommed onto back in 2014. And it was actually really hard to find at the time because they didn't make enough of it.
Oh my God, I remember those days.
It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
So this is a two-player skirmish style game, collectible, by the way, based on Quarriors. So designed by Mike Elliott, kind of revised and updated with work from Eric Lang. It is a game in which you have dice that represent different heroes, and you'll build out your deck based on the heroes that you have. So like if you got the starter kit, you would have Avengers on one side, X-Men on the other, and you roll your dice and you try to like match them up with different abilities on the cards that you have, right? It is collectible, of course, so you had to go buy boosters to try to find the better cards, to find the better dice that went with those cards.
Yes.
That part was probably the reason you don't see more of this game, because it was difficult to find, and then, of course, it is pay-to-play if you want to do well. But the gameplay itself was very solid. It's one of those games that I really wish they would have just released a big box version that you could just play. And they had a couple. Like, I got a Ninja Turtles one that was just like a big box full of dice that had all the stuff you needed to play it. But they just never did it properly. Like Quarrier style, here's a proper retail release of all the Marvel stuff. But for what it is and for what we were able to play, it was very good.
Yeah, they went after all the monies. Yeah. And they probably just should have went after some of the monies. And I think that would have led to a better release, because that was probably the worst botched release of a game in forever.
Yeah, it was bad. But
as far as the game is concerned, it was very good. I guess outside of the the exceptions, which were just like the little boosters where you have the dice kind of like, you know, edging their way into the card.
But
it was a fun game. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. All right. Our number six.
Number six is Thanos Rising, Avengers Infinity War.
He keeps coming back, this guy.
Yeah, so the Rising, you might be like, oh, this is an IP slap on. It is, but this was the first one of the Rising series. So since then, they've released Batman Who Laughs Rising, Harry Potter Death Eaters Rising, Star Wars Dark Side Rising, SpongeBob SquarePants, Plankton Rising. Yeah. And the most recent one was an Avatar, The Last Airbender Fire Nation game, which people really seem to like. But the first one was Thanos. And this came out, I want to say, like right before the movie, because there was promos you could get that were spoilers for the movie.
Yeah.
Like there was one of Thor's new axe, right?
Yeah.
Which they were like, don't get the promos till you've seen the movie, because they're spoilers for the movie. I'm like, okay.
I love that.
But in the game, you have a giant plastic Thanos in the middle, and he kind of turns around and attacks different quadrants, and you have to go out and take out his henchmen at the different quadrants and then ultimately defeat him. So it's a cooperative game where you're managing these different locations and building up and trying to take him out before he gets all the gems. So surprisingly good for a dice rolling co-op that's targeting like children and families. I really enjoyed it. I still have this, actually. The kids like it.
Nice.
So it's, I mean, any of those Rising games, they're all good. Pick the theme you like. But if you like Marvel, this is pretty good.
SpongeBob's fine, too.
Yeah, SpongeBob's fine.
All right, well, that leads us to number five, Age of Heroes.
We reviewed this recently, right?
This is like really in our kind of current memory, because Marvel Age of Heroes was, like we talked about, it's Lords of Waterdeep, but X-Men styled.
Yeah, and better. Was it better? Where did we land on that? I don't remember, but it's good.
It's different, but better in some ways. I think. I think that's a fair. I don't think it replaces Lords of Waterdeep, but I think it kind of owned its own spot. And turns out X-Men are also Marvel characters, so that's a thing.
Yeah, and you know what? Most of the other X-Men games are terrible, so we didn't include them.
They're super bad.
There's been, I think, three in the last four or 5 years that are legitimately terrible games. So if you're asking where those are, we didn't include them because we don't like them.
They're bad. Yeah, no, this is pretty good because you actually get the Marvel characters here. You have the X-Men, and they actually utilize their powers in a very thematic way, and they pair up in a very thematic way, so it makes a lot of thematic sense. And that's really what you want to have in a game. You want to feel like on some level, even as abstracted as it is, you're still playing a game. So yeah, Marvel Heroes, man.
Yeah.
All awesome. Right. That leads us to number four.
Number four is Marvel Crisis Protocol, which it's cheating a little because it's a miniatures game. It's a skirmish game where you buy miniatures. They don't come assembled. You are gluing them and painting them, and then you're playing. So Warhammer style. But you can buy a core set, which is the price of a board game. It comes with everything you need to play, and the game is very solid, right? So in that box, you get Black Widow, Captain America, Captain Marvel, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Baron Zemo, Crossbones, Dr. Octopus, Red Skull, and Ultron. Like, pretty solid starting crew for to have two sides here. They've released dozens of expansions for this thing at this point. And it's just a really solid, well-made, tight, like, small space skirmish game. Like, you're on streets, you're in parking lots, you're at airports, you're, you know, hiding behind buses and throwing dumpsters at each other. It's not like they have some more epic scale stuff, but it's generally like very close and tight together, not like a big army based game.
Sure.
Right. Which is perfect. That's what you want from Marvel, because you have the heroes and you have the villains and they should be fighting and punching each other. So, and like even more so than like HeroClix, where the maps are relatively big and kind of broad, this game keeps everything pretty close together and just forces you to take actions and do things.
Sure.
So I'm really excited for the new Star Wars one that Atomic Mass Games is making, because it's kind of built on this rule set. It'll give us something kind of to go alongside Legion, because this is just a really fun, stripped down way to play it, which I think is accessible. Like, if you want to play a skirmish game and you haven't before and you like Marvel, I would actually recommend this, whereas a lot of the times I wouldn't. Like, I've had people ask me, like, I like Star Wars, should I play Legion? I'm like, I don't know, do you like skirmish games? Because if not, the big armies, and I don't know. But this is one where I'm like, yeah, you should try it.
Excellent. All right, that leads us to number three, Anthony.
Marvel Legendary. This is the OG. This game just doesn't go away. It pops up on lists over and over again. People still play it. People still love it. I honestly thought it had finished up, but it hadn't. There is still new content being released for this game, which is amazing, because it's such a solid cooperative experience. Like, the only really big downside of this game is the like setup and organization time.
Yeah, a lot of cards to sleeve. Legendary. The legend of just like sleeving all those cards. Just like, what are you playing? I'm just sleeving Legendary. It's like, yeah, oh, yeah. I see that.
Yeah. It's great, though. Like, they release a new, like, let's see, in 2022, they released 5 expansions for this game. So, like, if you like Legendary, there's a lot of stuff to draw on, which is, it's what you want, right? You want content. This could be a game you just play all the time.
No, this could be a lifestyle game. And again, rightfully so, because it has the depth for it.
Yeah.
All right, number two, Marvel Champions. You've heard of this game, right?
I have, yeah. This is my number three game of all time, actually. So I know. And so we're not, obviously, this is basing it, we've based this list off of best Marvel games. If we're doing best games, this would be number one. So just saying, I would fight for that. I would pull out my own personal death ray.
Oh, no. help.
But yeah, it's taking the original cooperative LCG formula that Fantasy Flight and Nate French developed. With Lord of the Rings, the LCG, and kind of refined with Arkham Horror. And they've reworked it in a way that is really targeted towards skirmishes between heroes and villains. It's quick. It's simple. The rules are much more streamlined than those other two games. It doesn't have the most story content, but even then, like, these saga expansions do a pretty good job of walking you through like unique mechanics and building them up. Like, you know, The first one wasn't great, the Red Skull, but the more recent ones with like the Sinister Six and the X-Men are really, really fun and feel like you're playing through panels of a comic book. And they just keep releasing content. We're in a bit of a lull right now. They haven't released anything in a little while, but they just recently announced a new one coming soon. What is it? Next Evolution with the X-Force. So building on the X-Men stuff they've been doing recently. So content's still coming out. It's my favorite of the LCGs, and it's just a great gameplay experience, whether you're playing with other people or alone, which is rare, too, because usually with a game, I either like it alone or I like it with others. This one, I don't care. It's fun both ways. So, Marvel Champions, all the way.
Nice. So that leads us to our number one best Marvel game.
Marvel United. This is This is a tricky one, because if you have not backed any Kickstarters, you don't get all the cool stuff that make this the best game.
It's true.
So it's a very good game, and some of the modules are incredibly fun. But the main reason this is number one is because it has every single hero you could possibly think of.
In cards and in miniatures, too.
Yeah. Like, I think I added this up at one point. If you've backed both things, you should have like 250 or 300 heroes or characters total.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then the third one's coming in next year, and then that'll be another like 150 on top of everything. So, like, if you've ever read a comic book, probably there's a character in here that you recognize.
Sure. And it has all, like you said, with the Marvel Champions, which is like building up to having the different scenarios. Because of the three Kickstarters, you have all the scenarios here. You have, and you have like some amazing miniatures as far as like you have the Giant Sentinels, Galactus, you know, Fantastic Four, and the miniatures themselves are really good, right? They're the chibi kind of style, but a lot of them have like transparencies in them or different colors in them. They're very easy to paint. It's a co-op game, so you can play with family, but then there is like the X-Men one has that competitive element, so you can play team versus team. It has so many different game modes and modules that you can kind of add to making things more challenging or things a little bit easier. It just has everything. Like you said, if you've ever been interested, even in like a D-list kind of Marvel character, one of these Kickstarters has it and has a scenario that goes along with it as well. I think, especially this last Kickstarter, they just pulled everything out in the kitchen sink. So
yeah,
there you go. The best Marvel games, our top 10 Marvel games for you enjoy in your cinematic universe, wherever you may be. All right, everyone. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the Death Laser. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.